Welcome to the PAS Report Weekly Roundup Podcast. The PAS Report provides an honest analysis on the critical issues that matter to you without the biased media filters. Here's your host, Professor Nicholas Giordano.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the PAS Report Podcast. This is your host, Nick Giordano, and I'm always amazed at how phony the political officials and the press really are. I mean, how dumb do they think we are? There are so many examples, but the latest, it's about a horrific shooting that took place down in Cleveland, Texas. Over the weekend, a man, Francisco Oropeza, was shooting his rifle outside his home. Neighbor asked him to stop. He had people over, the baby was getting scared, and Oropeza then went into the neighbor's home, shooting five people, execution style. And what happened is horrific and tragic, but don't expect this story to last in the media all that long. See, it turns out Oropeza is a Mexican national, not a U.S. citizen. And since it doesn't fit a specific narrative, most of the media, they're not going to report on it, and they're not going to keep the coverage on it. As a matter of fact, most in the media just do a search. Again, this is not me making this stuff up. Just do a search, read through the articles, and you'll find that most in the media haven't even reported that he's a Mexican national. They are intentionally deceiving their audiences because they think you're dumb. That's what it comes down to. It really is stunning. But that's how they operate. And while some politicians have come out to bring up the gun issue, many others remain silent. Why? Why is that? Well, it's because as a Mexican national, he may have possessed the firearms illegally. See, depending on your immigration status, depending on the visa that's issued to you, many non-citizens are prohibited from shipping, transporting, receiving, or possessing firearms ammunition. So how do you get it? That's going to be the next question. But since it doesn't fit the narrative, they don't care. Don't expect to hear too much about this, but I just wanted to highlight how fake many of the politicians and those in the media are. It's like the Nashville shooter. They still haven't released the Nashville Shooter's Manifesto. They're waiting for the story to die. Then maybe they'll release it once nobody's paying attention. But why are they holding it back? It should have been released the day after the shootings. The victims' families have a right to know what's in there. Again, this shooting was out of the headlines real quick. Why is that? Many in the press wanted to ignore the fact that it was a Christian school and Christian students were the victims. Instead, the insane environment that we're living in, some even went so far to almost victimize the shooter and make it as if the trans community was the real victim in the shooting. It's disgraceful. Just be honest with the people. Be straight with us. We're mature. We're responsible. We can handle it. Stop trying to lie and manipulate everything to push an agenda. It's getting tedious out there. But I don't want to harp on it too long, so I'll just get angry. And I have a great guest coming on, and I don't want to be mad while I'm talking to this guest because he's a great guy, and I don't want to keep him waiting. I've been looking forward to this conversation. I'm bringing on author and teacher Jamal Boyce. Jamal spent 20 years in the classroom. He is someone that understands what education is really about, and he's the author of the book Teenage Perspectives on the Black Experience in America, a new curriculum he's building out. Everyone needs to check it out and read it because it is fascinating. And I want to talk to Jamal about how he is revolutionizing education and hear his insights on how he creates a classroom environment that encourages, wait for it, critical thinking and self-reflection. See, there's not too many that do that. And Jamal does. So I want to hear his thoughts. Jamal is also the founder of the Community Outreach Investment Network and the director of education for the African American Educational Cultural Festival. He is someone who understands what this is all about. He pushes students to confront their own biases, explore controversial issues from multiple perspectives. Jamal, welcome to the PAS Report. Glad you could come on. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm glad you could be here because I think that sometimes in my political world, when we're talking, there's a lot of people talking and dictating what people should think rather than listening and understanding certain groups of people and understanding why they may feel the way they do. Now, you come from this from a unique perspective. So you're a high school teacher. You've been in the classroom. You understand the students. You've been dealing with a student body for quite a long time.
Correct.
And you wrote a book, Teenage Perspectives on the Black Experience in America. So before we get into the book, what led you to write this book?
So a few years ago, actually 2 years ago, I was asked to teach African-American history and literature at my high school. I teach at Riverhead High School. I've been there for 20 years now. And I was asked to teach the course called African American History and Literature. And I actually turned it down for several reasons. One of the reasons I turned it down was because it was just another history course. You know, students have enough history courses, and it was just something the same by a different name. Another reason I turned it down was because I didn't want to be just a black face teaching African American history so that it could be said, oh, we have a black man teaching African American history, and look, we're doing our part. Right. We're doing our part, right? I want to do something with substance. I want to make an actual change. So I created a course titled The Black Experience in America. And basically what I did in the course was I combined pretty much four problems that I see in American education. I combined it into one course. And the reason I wrote the book was because most people, there's no other course like this on the high school level in America. And I wrote the book because many people have misconceptions of what the course is. They think they know what it is, but they actually don't. So I wrote the book as a tangible asset so I could show people what the course is about. So when the reader reads the book, they can actually see, oh, this is what the course is like. This is what the course is. And that's why I wrote the book, so that the reader could see what the course is, instead of me just saying, hey, I teach a course called The Black Experience in America, and they think they understand what it is.
Now, when you first introduced this course, what was it like in the classroom trying to get through material, the feedback going back and forth with the student body? What was it like?
When I pitched the course to my district, I pitched to them that it would be a critical thinking course. So one of the problems that I see in American education is indoctrination. I think our public schools are not education centers, they're indoctrination centers. And I pitched to them, I said, look, I want to discuss things that would help students learn how to critically think. So they'll never know my perspective. They'll never know what I think. I'm going to give them two sides of the perspective centered around the experiences of Black Americans. And I told them that I didn't want to do the quote unquote safe thing. So for example, during Black History Month, what do we always see? Martin Luther King Jr., we see Rosa Parks, and everything is safe. And I want to do things that were quote unquote controversial. They're not controversial to me. I can discuss anything. But to many people, they're subjects that people try to shy away from. So I want to make a change and a difference. So I listed a group of topics that I would include in my curriculum because I was designing the curriculum. And I said, basically, if I can't do this my way, I don't want to do it at all. I listed some topics. Some of the topics I listed were racism and its effect on the Black experience, stereotypes of Black Americans, the N-word, the usage of the N-word, and who can use the N-word, things like that. Who are Black Americans? For example, like, am I really or actually a Black American? Now, that sounds crazy on the surface, but that's one of the things we critically think about and discuss in the class. And a bunch of other things that I put on the list, I thought the district would say no. I thought they were going to say no way, no chance. They actually said yes. And I was pretty shocked.
Yeah, people need to realize school districts, especially ones in the Long Island area, don't like controversy.
That is correct. And you got to remember, too, when I created the class, critical race theory was hotly debated. So this is around 2020, 2021. You just had the murder of George Floyd a year earlier. You just had the presidential election, which was hot. It was just a hot time for race and discussion about race and schools. And so I was nervous. I thought people were going to come to board meetings and have a misconception about it. But honestly, the community was actually very supportive because they understood I was not indoctrinating the students, which is what I think a lot of parents want, is they don't want their children to be indoctrinated. The only thing I'm teaching my students is how to critically think. They don't actually
know what I do. Which is severely lacking in the United States.
Right, which is the second problem that I have with American education, with indoctrination.
When you first started teaching the course, now, just so everyone's aware, as a teacher, you constantly refine your lessons, what worked, correct, what doesn't work, what went well, what didn't went well. But when you first started introducing it, what was the student reaction? What were some of the discussions that were taking place in the classroom?
Sure. So the third problem that I have with American education is we completely ignore the perspectives of the teenagers, of the students that we're working with. They don't have a place where they can voice what they think. They also don't have a place where they can challenge the teacher. So my students loved the course because it was the first time in their school career that they could actually challenge the teacher without getting in trouble. In my course, the students are allowed to give their perspectives on a specific topic. And what I do is I play devil's advocate. I challenge their perspective. I never tell them they're wrong. I just show them a different perspective. And what happens is they're allowed to come back at me. See, in the average American classroom, if a student challenges something the teacher says, what happens? The teacher labels them as a rebel rouser, a troublemaker, and then that follows them throughout schooling. My course gives my students a chance to challenge, even though they don't know my perspective, they're still challenging me on a perspective that's contrary to what they believe, and they understand you're not right or wrong. There's just different perspectives. The only thing they can be wrong on is something factual. So if something's factual and they're wrong, okay, you're wrong there. But their perspective is never wrong. So if you ever came to my class, you'll actually see my students challenge something that I say. They go right back at me and I go right back at them.
And that's the way education is supposed to be. I mean, listen, I'm the same way in my classroom. I'll take liberal points of view, conservative points of view. I'll be all over the map showing them. And I tell my students, opinions aren't wrong. They're your opinions. You need to back up your opinions.
That is evidence. Facts. Correct.
You need to use facts. But you're allowed to have your own opinion and nobody could ever tell you you're wrong. So conversations, what were they like in the classroom when students, what were some of the things that the teenagers believe? What's some of their perspectives?
There's a variety of different topics that we discussed. I'll give you an example from last year. Okay. The last year was the first year of the course. And the previous year we had just had an election. So the students don't know who I voted for. I just played devil's advocate to anything they said. We talked about presidential racism. We discussed, does race, a president being racist, does that actually affect Black people? Because we did a whole unit on racism. When I talked to the students, most of the students were, they were minority students all last year. And they all said that they would go for Joe Biden because Donald Trump was a racist. Now, my job is to play devil's advocate and to switch it and to show a different perspective. So I said, okay, so presidential racism matters to you. You think Donald Trump's a racist? They said, yes. I would have voted for Joe Biden. That's what they said. So I said, no problem. So I showed them a laundry list of things that Joe Biden had said or did that were deemed as racist also, that my students had never heard of before. They had never seen it before, right? They were never exposed to it. So when I showed it to them and I said, okay, well, if you think Donald Trump is a racist, which I'm not telling you he is or isn't, I'm not trying to change that for you. Well, then how could you vote for Biden if I give you this example that he's racist? So many of the students start to think and said, wow, I didn't know that. They saw a different perspective, and it made them critically think and reanalyze or reassess what they thought. You understand? And those are some of the things that we do in the class is when I show them a different perspective on things like that. Here's another perspective. What is Black culture? We had a long discussion about that. So for example, I would ask you, am I a part of Black culture? The assumption would be I am, but who determines that? How do you determine who's a part of Black culture? Why can't you be a part of Black culture? As a white man, you know, as a self-identified white man, if you self-identify as a white person, well, who said that you're not part of Black culture?
Well, I'm Sicilian, so I go into many different cultures.
That is correct.
We were classified as Black at one point. We were classified as white as one point.
Right.
I say we're neither. We're just an island all to ourselves. That's the beauty of it.
It's how you identify. So, for example, there are Black Americans who will tell you that Black Republicans are not part of Black culture. Well, who are you to determine who's part of what culture? And we had a long discussion about Black culture, who's a part of Black culture and who determines it. So these are some of the things that we discuss in the course.
Now, do you get into the idea? So when we look at it, you have African-American and Black, right? I mean, that's the two that we always use. Now, when we say African-American, you notice how we never it's not Nigerian-American. Only recent immigrants from Nigeria are Nigerian-American. And I just find that interesting. But do you find the mindset different of newly arrived Black immigrants into your classroom compared to those that have been in America for three, four, five generations?
Yes. So we talked about that, too. So going back with the culture, you know, my family's from the Caribbean. My parents immigrated to America from the Caribbean in the 1970s. And we talked about the differences between Black or African Americans born here, Caribbean Americans, and Americans from Africa who are Americans. And there's a difference and there's been friction. So when we talk about Black Americans, who are we really talking about? Because there is no real Black culture, just subcultures within a Black culture. As a Caribbean American, I'll give you an example. My parents never really focused on slavery. It just wasn't a thing that they moved to this country for a better opportunity. So my perspective as a Black person whose family came from the Caribbean might be different than a Black person whose family generationally went through slavery and Jim Crow and so forth, so on. I sometimes say that it might have been a good thing my parents did not grow up in America because of my father was born in 1952, so my mother. And if they had to go through racial segregation and the N-word and lynchings and so forth, so on, they might have passed that on to me and I might have harbored something in me against white people. But they came from another country. They never experienced that. They just came here to work and get a better job. And they instilled in me, hey, pick yourself up, work. That's it. There's no right or wrong, but it just shows that perspectives of Black Americans don't fall under one umbrella. There's many different perspectives of Black Americans. So you'll see there are Nigerian Americans who have customs. I have no idea what they're doing. I would look at you and say, okay, what are they doing? You look at me and be like, oh, Jamal, can you explain to me what they're doing? I'll say, I can't explain it. I have no idea what they're doing. Even within the Caribbean, My family's from Barbados. My wife's from Haiti. Now, they're both Caribbean islands. And to the, on the surface, we both appear black, so forth, so on.
But two different cultures.
Two different cultures. They speak Haitian Creole. My family speaks a language called Bajan. I don't know what her family's saying when they're speaking Creole, but people will look at us and say, oh, you guys are the same. No. The myth is that all black Americans think and act the same. That's a myth. That's why it's called the black experience, because there are multiple experiences of black people that we need to analyze.
That's such an interesting point, because you see all these political figures, you see the media figures, you see a lot of people that just try to lump everyone into their own boxes, you know, and that's why I have a problem with a lot of DEI stuff, is because you push people towards groups in the attempt to tribalize society. Now, we need to take a quick break, but when we get back, I want to know what your students think about that. I want to know what your students think about how they're trying to be pushed into little boxes that they could check off. So we're going to take a quick break, everyone. Hang tight. We'll be right back. Listen up, PAS Report audience. Experts say that China is hoarding a massive amount of food. They're soon going to have over two-thirds of the globe's corn reserves, over half its rice reserves, and over half its wheat reserves. But when asked about it, China lies. And one expert says that they, of course, will never admit to doing something like that. Well, what does China know that we don't? When it comes to the global food shortages, China is the canary in the coal mine. And you have to understand, China is the world's number one food importer. They rely on the rest of the world to keep their people fed, so they can't afford to mess up. There'll be riots, civil panic, or even worse, when over a billion people can't eat, it's going to create a crisis for them. What does that mean for us? What does that mean for Americans like me and you? Food shortages. That's why it's a smart idea to stock up on a kit of the best-selling 4 Patriot survival food. Create your own stockpile of the best-selling 4 Patriot survival food kits. It's hand-packed in the United States. The kits are compact, stock easily. They have different delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, and I can attest to that because I use 4 Patriots, and their 5-star reviews on the website rave about the flavor and taste. Right now, you get 10% off your first purchase of 4 Patriot survival food by typing in the code PAS at checkout. Just go to 4patriots.com, use code PAS to get 10% off your first purchase of 4 Patriot Survival Food. That's 4patriots.com. Use code PAS.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Welcome back, everyone. So before the break, we were talking about how people, those in power, like to push everyone towards group or tribalized society. What do your students think about being pushed towards group and just being labeled and check boxes off? How do your students feel about that? Are they insulted by that?
They do, and they really get offended because they've told me, so this is the second year of the course, and both sets of students have told me nobody listens to them. So they tell me, they've told me, like, educators, their teachers don't listen to them. They want to voice something, but they're just ignored because it's kind of like, well, you're a teenager, I have a degree, you don't know what the hell you're talking about, shut up. They say a lot of their parents don't listen to them. They said that my course is the first course where they can actually voice what they think on particular topics without being judged. Because there's no judgment in my class. It's an understanding that we all have different perspectives and nobody's right or wrong. We're going to challenge each other. But in the end, I know I'm not right or wrong and so forth for you. That's what they like about it. So they say that in school, they don't get this opportunity outside of my class. They feel like they're unheard, which is why a lot of students say they don't like school.
And I find that interesting because I remember when I went to school, I was allowed to say whatever I wanted in my classrooms. I was allowed to give my opinion, give my thoughts. And again, teachers would challenge me, whether it was high school or college, it didn't matter.
Right.
They would challenge me, but we were allowed to talk. What do you think changed in our education system that it's become like this?
You know, it's funny.
It's a loaded question. I understand.
Yeah, it's tough. I you know what it is? I think with a lot of educators, not all, but with a lot of educators, I think we've forgotten why we're here. It's not about ego. I don't have an ego with my job. My job is a service. I'm here to help students learn. And however I can help them learn, that's what I'm going to try to do. I think a lot of times with what we have in education is we have a lot of people who think because they have a degree, I have my master's, I have my doctorate.
I see it all the time.
Right. I'm just the most intelligent person in the world. And the students feed off of that. They kind of get that energy. When I talk to my students, they don't get that feeling from me because they understand their voice is equal to mine. I tell my students all the time, I don't even know where my degrees are.
No, see, I tell my students I'm an authoritarian in my classroom. Authoritarian. They could disagree with me and everything, but no, I'm only joking. I do tell them
I know.
I'm authoritarian,
yeah.
But
it's
you're
like
right,
I tell them.
Because that's so important. I look at myself. I'm one of the few college professors that actually don't have a PhD, and nor would I get a PhD. And and so I have real world experience. I come at things like you with a different perspective, and I bring that into the class, and that's what draws the students in. Now, with your student body, at the end of the semester or at the end of the class, how many of them come up to you and say, I probably learned more in this class in 1 year than I did in 4 years of education?
Well, I've had students tell me that. One of the things that my students have told me is they've told me, and I can see it, they've learned to question everything. So that's the key of what my course is trying to do. And combined with the Black experience is understanding that there's multiple perspectives to things. So for example, I have a student, I've a couple of white students this year who are in the course. And one of them has told me, they said, Mr. Boyd, I never looked at something that way. I never looked at that perspective. And they told me that this is the first class where they were like, wow, I'm actually seeing multiple perspectives on something instead of being told something. So I tell my students, I tell people that my class, I don't teach my students, I discuss with them. You understand? So we'll look at Black history, we'll look at the experiences, but I'm not teaching it to them, I'm discussing with them. So for example, there's no tests in my course. The assignments are all based off their perspective. They just have to back it up with evidence, so forth, so on. But tests indicate that there are right and wrong answers. Well, there are no right and wrong answers in my class. We look at something and then we'll take it and we'll look at it from multiple perspectives. We'll take something like slavery and we'll look at slavery from multiple perspectives. If I ask the average person, did slavery have an impact on me as a Black man? Many people will look at me and say, oh yeah, American slavery did. But then my argument on the other perspective, well, my parents came from the Caribbean in the 1970s. So how did American slavery really impact me since I was born in 1980? That's a different perspective. So how impactful was slavery, American slavery, on all Black Americans? Well, it had different impacts on people. But my students come in thinking everybody who's Black in America suffered because of slavery. That's not factually true. So they come to me and say, ah, I never knew that perspective because nobody ever exposed it to me.
You know, I see the same thing at the college level. So my students will come in, and unfortunately, everything's so dumbed down in this day and age where they make it as if every issue, doesn't matter what the issue is, every issue is just black or white. There's either this way or there's that way.
Right.
And my job is to show them that there's an entire gray area that exists, and the issues are far more complex than they can imagine. Do your students begin to see that the complexity of the issues, that it's not as simple as saying slavery is good or bad, or the United States was evil because it had slavery, or it was necessary in order to keep the country whole at first until we can separate it out? You know, do they begin to realize the complexities of not only the issues of today, but our founding, our history, and everything in between?
Yes. So what happens is here's how I know that they're seeing that gray area. They start challenging each other. So one student will say something and then I don't have to do it. Another student will raise their hand and challenge directly that student, and they'll go at each other, respectfully, of course. And that's my signal to me. Okay, they're getting it, because this student said something and the other student automatically had a different perspective to challenge the other student. So we even talk about America, right? One of the questions we discuss in my class is America a racist nation? Now, I don't tell them what I think. It's just a question. And whatever they say, I'm going to play devil's advocate to it. So my students will say America is a racist nation. So then my counter to that is, okay, well, when I say America, who are you talking about? Because a lot of Black people, not all, but a lot of people will hear that question and hear, are white people racist? You know, some white people will hear that question, or a lot of white people hear, are white people racist? Without understanding, Black people can be racist as well. Hispanics can be racist as well. Asians, so is America a racist nation? We discuss that. And then the next thing we discuss is, name a nation on earth that isn't racist. So is America really that evil if it's a racist nation, if all nations are racist? And the third thing we discuss is racism actually harmful? If we look up the definition of racism, is it actually a harmful thing? Most of my students don't know the definition of racism. So what I do is we define certain words and then we reanalyze and look to see, because a lot of my students, they don't know the definitions of words. Most adults don't know the definitions of words.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, they don't know the definition. So when I ask them the definition of a word, I have them tell me the definition or write it down. And then what we do is we go to I have a smart board, and I'll Google the definition of the word, like racism. I'll look at Merriam-Webster, Macmillan, dictionary.com, and we'll form an analysis of multiple definitions. Then they start to see, oh, my definition is wrong. So when I ask them, where did you get that definition of racism, for example, you know what they all tell me? In school. So I'm like, okay, well, school taught you something incorrect. So if school taught you this, that was incorrect, what else did school teach you that could be wrong? And that's where indoctrination, I'm so against indoctrination, and I'm pro critical thinking. Critical thinking, you ask questions and you search the answers yourself. None of my students have ever looked up the word racism on their own. Somebody told them what racism is, and that's why they all had it wrong.
Well, and that's part of the biggest problem with the education system that exists, is that they get fed information. Some of the information's not accurate. Some of it's not put in context. Some of it is propaganda that's being pushed. Mm-hmm. But my fear, and you're going to encounter this before I do, is my fear is that we've actually left the idea of indoctrination, and now we're almost at like full-on brainwashing. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, when we look at controversial topics, so you look at something like gender theory or critical race theory, whatever theory you want to bring in. These were taught at the college level because it's theory and students haven't developed in order to understand the theory. We can bring it down to the high school level, juniors, seniors, usually we bring it down to, but now you're seeing these theories, quote unquote, being pushed on kids as young as kindergarten and first grade and second grade and third grade, where they can't push back. I mean, you know, they're going to hear what the teacher says. Correct. Oh, my teacher said it, and this is true. And I was explaining, because one of my students said today said, we're banning books in the United States. So I said, okay, name me the books we're banning. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't name a book that we were banning.
Right.
Okay. So you hear the slogan, we're banning books.
Right.
And then I further, well, are we banning the books in kindergarten and first grade, second grade, and elementary school libraries? Because there's a big difference, right? So, and I explained to them, we're not going to let second graders read Lord of the Flies, right? It's pretty, first of all, they wouldn't understand it, but also it's a very violent book.
Right.
And so it's graphic, it's violent. And I tried taking it away from the whole trans debate because I wanted to show them that once you get emotional in an argument,
yes,
it's a lost cause.
It's a lost cause.
So nobody's going to sit there and get emotional about Lord of the Flies. And it was just a point I'm bringing. But what I'm asking you is, we're seeing this in K, first, second, third grade, where they're pushing this theory as if it's fact on children. Mm-hmm. So what do you anticipate coming down the pike? And like I said, you're going to be encountering it before I do.
I think with education, now I'm just one person. You know, I'm in the high school level. So by the time they get to me, it's kind of like too late, if that makes sense. They've already been.
Well, it's our job to deprogram them.
To deprogram them. The problem is it's so hard to deprogram them. Because one of the things that, here's a major problem I have in the United States of America. It's not just even education that I've noticed. And this is not just with school. This is with other things that I have debates with people about. People will literally ignore fact. I mean, it's like, no, I don't see it that way. I'm like, oh, there's no way to see it. It's the truth. It's a fact. That's what people do. So
they destroyed that, right? Because now it's about my truth.
Now, here's what I say to that. Here's why I hate that phrase.
Me too.
Nobody owns the truth. The truth is not owned by anybody. The truth is the truth. If that makes sense, you know?
Well, it does. I tell my students, first of all, if we go along with this my truth BS, well, what if my truth conflicts with your truth? Then someone's truth is going to be wrong. Someone's going to be right. But I explained to him, truth, we don't have to accept truth. Human beings do not have to accept truth to give it its binding force of validity. Truth is truth.
Truth is truth.
It exists whether you want to accept it or not.
That is correct. And to say it's my truth, no, it's just the truth. You don't have ownership of the truth. So what happens is, and so one of the things I do in my class that I know some teachers don't like, but I don't care. I encourage my students to start their sentences with, I think, not I feel. Now, why do I do that? Feel is an emotion. Thinking at least shows you're trying to be cognitive. So for example, when people start a sentence with, I feel, it's almost as if no matter how ridiculous it is, I have to accept it because it's just your feelings. I have to respect your feelings. So an example I give my students is, if I feel like tomorrow is Saturday and I don't show up to work, and it's really Thursday and my boss fires me, I will go to my boss and say, well, I felt like it was Saturday, so you can't fire me. Well, no, the truth of the matter is today is Thursday. Now, if you think today's Thursday, but you're not sure, what will you probably do? You'll actually go investigate and look at a calendar to, oh, it's not Saturday, it's Thursday. So I encourage my students, don't start with I feel, start with I think, because I don't want you to use emotion to cloud your judgment. Okay, because what happens is when we hear the truth, we don't like the truth, but the truth is the truth. And I may feel like I'm 6'8", but in reality, the truth is I'm 5'8". It is what it is. I think in America, because people are so emotionally driven nowadays, I don't know why, we just ignore facts. Like, facts don't matter. It's I say something, 2 + 2 = 4, and it's my, well, I see it as 6. What? And we've lost our way. Facts just don't matter anymore. And I want my students to understand we can have different perspectives, but you have to have it rooted in fact. And that's a key that I'm trying to get them to do. At my level, it's probably harder at your level by the time they get to you. It's so hard to get them to look at something different, just something simple to look differently, that I really don't know what I can do except the best that I can with the group that I have.
One of the things that I found, I mean, I've been doing this now almost 18 years in the classroom. And one of the things I found is that when you start getting them to think like you're doing a phenomenal job, I must say.
Thank you.
That they actually are open-minded. They are hungry. They do want to know more. As a matter of fact, they're more open-minded than most adults I have to
deal with. That is correct.
And I do have to say that right off the bat. And so I've never had an issue in my classroom where we were engaging in a debate and one student was disrespectful to other students and they were yelling or screaming. Like, that's never happened in my classroom. You look at, I think a lot of people underestimate the younger generation. And I think that the younger generation is fully capable when they have the information available to them and they're taught how to think, like you said. The problem I have, unfortunately, is that they're not being taught how to think and they're basically just automatons, right? They're like being trained as robots to just push political agendas and become social activists, because that's what we're witnessing. It's, you know, the idea of social justice is a political concept. It's not about actual social justice. And so it's political opinions and political agendas that get determined whether it's classified as social justice or not. So when you start seeing that in curriculums, when you start seeing that being pushed in the school systems, how do you feel about that?
You know, I'm not a big fan, again, because like I mentioned, I want my students to critically think. I want them to question everything. I encourage my students to question me. It's like you said, when they push certain things, they're not showing the opposite side to it and letting the student make the correct choice. I actually do believe if you show people a subject or something and you give them the pros and cons, most times they'll go with the good. Maybe I'm naive, but if I can show you the good.
No,
and the
but
bad,
that's interesting that you say that, because that's the way you think. And the way I look at it is that they have so little faith of the American people that they don't trust the American people, that they don't trust whoever, it doesn't matter the age demographic, that they just don't have faith in the American people, because if they did, they wouldn't have to act or behave the way they did.
Well, that goes back to what I was saying about indoctrination from the time they're just told, where instead of somebody giving them both sides of the issue. So, for example, let's take slavery. Well, America had slavery, which it did. Horrific. We understand that. Well, so did Britain. So did China. So did... Now that
every South American country, every African countries,
you know, even when I explained to them, many of my students did not know. So many of my students, they thought historically that America went into Africa and took the slaves. And then when I point out, I'm giving them a different perspective. They still don't know what I think, but I had to point out to them. I said, well, you do realize that many of those African kingdoms captured those Black Africans and gave them to America and the Western powers. They didn't, because the European powers, they couldn't go deep into Africa because they would have gotten sick and die. They actually had to make deals with many of the African kingdoms who handed them. So I said, if you're going to be angry at America, which is your prerogative, I'm not telling you not to be, why aren't you angry at the African kingdoms who did the same thing and who kept slavery well after America abolished it, well after England abolished it? I'm not saying don't be angry or so forth. I'm just showing you a different perspective, which they had no idea that that happened.
You should show them the video Prince Among Slaves. It's a documentary. It was a fascinating documentary. You should show that to them.
Okay.
Jamal, I really appreciate you being on, and I'd love to have you back to get updates on how the course is going and progressing.
Sure.
We're
going
to have links up at the website, PASReport.com. You can check out Jamal's book, Teenage Perspectives on the Black Experience in America. Jamal, you're doing such good work out there. Keep it up, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I appreciate this opportunity. And to your listeners, you know, please support the book. Support what I'm trying to do with American education. I can't do it by myself. I do need parental support. I would love to bring this to other schools, and let's make a change to our educational system. If you don't like the way American schools are operating, here's a chance to support an actual teacher who's trying to make a change.
Jamal is really doing great work out there, and I encourage people to support his efforts because we need more teachers like him in the classroom. Be sure to check out his book, Teenage Perspectives on the Black Experience in America. I have the links up at the PAS Report website, PASReport.com. As for Wednesday, I am going to take on all the COVID frauds directly because too many of these little Mussolini wannabes, they're trying to rewrite history. They're trying to escape their own culpability of everything that was done in this society. And I'm not going to allow them to get away with it. You are not going to want to miss this episode. So trust me, tune in. As always, please share this episode with your family and friends and on social media. If you find the podcast informative, please give the PAS Report a 5-star rating and write a review on any podcast platform that allows it. I want to thank you for joining me today, and I will be back on Wednesday with another great episode of the PAS Report podcast.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Thank you for listening to the PAS Report Weekly Roundup Podcast.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Be sure to rate, share, and subscribe to the podcast so you'll never miss an episode. Also, visit PASReport.com and follow us on Twitter at PAS Report.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.